Once upon a time, there was a young boy who was born to a poor family who lived in an underdeveloped neighborhood where food was scarce, living conditions were terrible. Throughout their lives, they had to struggle to survive, a lot of the time by begging, finding whatever kind of work possible for a mere $20 a day. And then on top of that was probably taxes. And in extreme times, they had to even take the risk of being thrown in jail for stealing. Since his family didn't have any money to raise their son properly, sending him away for schooling and education was not a possibility, for they couldn't even afford to do that. They wanted that for him, obviously. And they didn't want him to grow up the way they did. They loved him very much. The day came when his parents told him that he would have to go out on his own, find work, and become successful. He was, in a sense, their ticket out. And he would be the first one in the family to become successful. He would be their hero to save them from this life. So, at age 15, he was out on his own to do whatever it took to do what his parents had told him to do. Now, as you can imagine, he was under a lot of pressure. Since he didn't know anybody, he didn't know where to go or what to do. And while he was on his quest for success, he was confronted by some teenagers who had asked him where he was from. He answered them and also told them that he needed to make money. They offered him to work for them, but little did he know what he was getting himself into. And little did he know between right from wrong, at least not the way it was explained to him by his new so-called friends. He did all the wrong things to make money. He was extremely lucky for a while in his job of stealing, but his luck ran out severely the day he was caught. All of a sudden, his friends were nowhere to be found, and he had to suffer the consequences by being thrown in jail. At 18, he was released from prison, but still had not learned his lesson, and went right back to where he left off by doing the only thing that he thought he was good at. This time, however, his stealing became more serious when he started robbing places at gunpoint to get whatever money as possible. And for the longest time, he managed to get away. There was a reward out for his capture, and he was now well known throughout the area as a dangerous criminal with a terrible reputation. He was now 21, and just when things were at its worst point, always being on the run, constantly looking over his shoulder, he was finally captured by a certain individual. And instead of being thrown back into jail, this individual gave him a choice at a brand new life to completely start over and become successful the way his parents wanted him to be. Now, this is a peculiar situation, and then certain men offered him education to be taught so he could get a great job to become successful. So he agreed. He didn't really have anything to lose. And he finally started to realize more clearly that his lifestyle was wrong and that he wanted to change his ways. He was now 25, and his education was complete. And with hard work came success, a lot of success. He was beginning to become one of the wealthiest individuals in the whole area. Amazingly, people started to forget about his bad reputation and started to take advantage of him because of his money. He once again had so many so-called friends, and he didn't know any better. He was told what to do with his money, literally wasting it away on people and unnecessary things. His success, however, went to his head, and he couldn't control his money. The money and his close friends started to control him. His riches was his number one priority. and his knowledge that he had received in his education to make him successful slowly started to fade away. But money and riches can become fatal, as we will see. He began to forget what his purpose was from the beginning, and he became selfish. He started to get back into the same type of problems he had before, even though both situations were different, but he now could not control his money, and he became careless with it. He felt all alone again. He started to miss his parents. He was now 30 years old, and he wanted to see them, wondering how they were doing. He was so caught up in his own success that he almost forgot about them. So that day came when he went to visit them. As he approached that old, decaying, termite-infested house, the ground started to shake violently. Trying to keep his balance, he rushed into the house as it slowly started to fall apart right on top of him. But with all pain aside, all he could think about was getting to them. He called out for them, and they responded terrified, yet excited at the same time. They were in the next room, and they were trapped by debris and a fire which broke out, and he was having an extremely difficult time getting to them. The shaking was increasing in intensity, and the ground started opening up right in between them. But he knew if he didn't do anything to save them, that they weren't going to make it. But he also knew that his life was in jeopardy by saving theirs. That, however, was not an option to him. He lunged across the gap in the ground, and as it continued to widen, barely making it to the other side, he got to them, he quickly hugged them, and told them that he was sorry that he couldn't be there sooner. He then grabbed a wooden beam and threw it across the gap to make a ledge for them to cross. He knew that time was of the essence, since the ledge was getting more and more unstable and the fire was intensifying. He had his mother go across first, and then his father, who struggled since the beam started to give away, and he had to jump to get to the other side. He knew that he wouldn't be able to make it, and he shouted out to them how much he loved them. Now, throughout the story, you will find many symbolic meanings, which I plan on going through in relation to biblical examples. And some of these principles can also be applied personally. Let me start by saying that this story is not about me or my parents. In fact, it's not about anybody in particular. It's just a story that I made up several years ago. So now all suspense aside, I can breathe in like, oh, not wondering who it's about. So hopefully this is going to clear up confusion, suspicion that may be on the minds of some of you. But I want to review this story and focus on certain aspects and tie it to the Bible with examples that could relate. We see at the beginning of the story that the boy's parents wanted him to go out on his own to become successful. Now, even though they were poor and couldn't offer him education, this would prove to be problematic since guidance from his parents could not be provided to him. An example can be read in Proverbs 29 and verse 15. Proverbs 29, verse 15. We read, "The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." And also back in chapter 22 and verse 6. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Well, let's also notice a New Testament example in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. "You fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." So he was left on his own to find a new life and to become successful. Now, parents must do whatever they can to teach their child in the Lord, that is, God's way of life. There's still, however, a choice that a child has to make in the future. Parents, or whoever, does everything they can. Just like God does everything he can to teach us his word, we still have a choice to make. Now, this young man, he met people who he thought were friends. But he stumbled into the wrong crowd and started doing things which were wrong. Now, in this case, he didn't know right from wrong at this point. But what about us? Have we ever been in such a situation where we met the wrong type of people and were tempted to do things that we knew were wrong? What does the Bible have to say about these types of situations? If we go back to Proverbs chapter 1. Proverbs chapter 1, beginning verse 10. And I will read to verse 19. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us, let us have one purse. The temptations that we go through, we meet wrong types of people. They're going to entice us to do things that we shouldn't do. It may all sound appealing. Well, how easy it is to take that right over there. No one's there. You get away with it, so we think. Verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Verse 18, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owner. Greed has a lot to do with stealing. Let's continue on in chapter 4 and verse 14. Proverbs 4 and verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of the wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Verse 18, but the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. And we know exactly what is associated with darkness. Obviously quite the opposite. What God is all about. So, you may be able to get away with it for a little while, but sooner or later it's going to catch up. And he eventually got into trouble for it. He reaped what he had sown. He suffered the consequences. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. Let's also look at Romans chapter 2, verses 5 and 6. Romans 2 and verse 5. But in accordance with your hardness and your impenitent heart, you are treasuring up for yourself wrath in the day of wrath and revelation of the righteous judgment of God, who will render to each one according to his deeds. The day will come where you have to give account to all you have done, all your actions, especially when you haven't repented over them. But you know, that wasn't enough for him. He didn't learn his lesson after he was caught the first time. And he went right back to doing what he did before. He thought he was doing the right thing, but he was only kidding himself. Going back to Proverbs 16:25, we read this. Proverbs 16, verse 25, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." He hadn't really learned his lesson, still wasn't convinced completely that what he was doing was wrong. But that would all begin to change, however, and his eyes would start opening. He met a certain individual, a new man, who started his conversion process. And he now started doing all the right things to become successful. Notice Psalm chapter 1 and verse 3. Psalm 1 verse 3. "He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of the water, that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper." A great example of someone who was in this situation would be that of Joseph in Genesis chapter 39, verses 2 and 3. We all are familiar with his story and what all happens. Genesis chapter 39, verse 2. "The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand." Obviously, there's a big difference when you have God helping you. To doing things on your own without God, you may be successful for a little while, but that will run out. Also notice verse 23 of Genesis 39. "The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper." No matter what circumstance Joseph was under, the Lord was with him and made him prosper. This man studied a lot, this young man, and received more and more knowledge, thereby achieving success. Now we must remember where all our success and knowledge comes from. And we see that in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 19. Ecclesiastes 5 verse 19. "As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth, and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God." Now we're reading here about physical riches and wealth, but it goes far beyond that too. And of course, God can bless us in that way. We must also be careful that we don't let our success and our blessings go to our heads and forget to thank God, which can be something very easy to forget about, especially then when we think that, we've got everything we need. What do we need God for anymore? Thanking God is an effort. And with riches and blessings also come tests. And we have to be careful that we don't misuse our blessing. An example of that is in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 11 through 19. Deuteronomy 8, beginning verse 11. "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and you dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied." Verse 14, "When your heart is lifted up," you start becoming proud. You start forgetting about the blessings that God has given you. "And you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, who led you through temptations." You can also put in there all the tests and trials that we go through, who has always been there to help us along the way. in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end. Verse 17. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. Verse 18. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is in this day. Verse 19. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, serve them, worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. If you forget about God, you run away from God, what does it say? It's pretty clear here. I mean, God will forget about you too. I mean, he gives chances. He gives us a choice to make. And if we choose the wrong way, and we don't follow God anymore, what does it say? You will die. This certain individual, whom this young man had met, was a great change in his life. And his eyes are finally opened from wrong to right. And he realized what he had done in the past was wrong. Now, this is also a great example for us personally. We had changed from the old man to the new man in our conversion process at baptism. And even before baptism, we were going through a conversion process. Notice Romans chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. Romans 6 and verse 1. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. How shall we who died to sin, or put sin behind us, live any longer in it? Verse 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of disobedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. I speak in human terms because of the weakness of your flesh. For just as you presented your members as slaves of uncleanness and of lawlessness, leading to more lawlessness, so now present your members as slaves of righteousness for holiness. Verse 20, for when you were slaves of sin, you were free in regard to righteousness. What fruit did you have in them, or to have then, in the things of which you are now ashamed? For the end of those things is death. Verse 22, but now, having been set free from sin and having become slaves of God, you have your fruit to holiness and the end, everlasting life. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus our Lord. And just as this man was a slave of sin, so were we. And we had to get out of that lifestyle. Continuing Romans chapter 8, verse 6. Romans 8, verse 6, for to be carnally minded is death. Physicality. We're not going to live forever being physical. Eventually, it leads to death. Same with being carnally minded. But to be spiritually minded is life and peace. And our ultimate goal is to become God, to be spiritual, everlasting. Because the carnal mind is hatred against God. For it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. Verse 8, so then those who are in the flesh cannot please God. If we are continuously in a carnal nature, how can we then please God? A change has to happen. Verse 9, but you are not in the flesh, but in spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you. Now, if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he is not his. And how do you get the Spirit of Christ? How do you receive the Holy Spirit? Through baptism. It is a must. This young man started becoming very wealthy. Now, though, people started to take advantage of him. And a good example of this is Proverbs chapter 14, verse 20. Proverbs 14, verse 20. The poor man is hated even by his own neighbor, but the rich has many friends. It's quite ironic. Almost a bit sarcastic, too. Sure, I mean, how many poor men, or homeless, whatever it is, how many friends do they really have, right? The rich, however, have many friends, and why is that? Also notice chapter 19, verse 4, Proverbs 19, verse 4. Wealth makes many friends, but the poor is separated from his friend. Now, to be spiritually rich, now that's a different thing, but the called ones out of the world are not considered the wealthy, not considered the rich, do not have many friends. You know, what is more important here? So it is interesting, these scriptures. But it's this power of wealth that he had start to control him. That is dangerous situation to be in. And we see in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, why it is so. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10. He who loves silver, loves gold, who loves money, will not be satisfied with silver. Because why? Once again, money is a physical thing. It's a temporary satisfaction. Nor he who loves abundance with increase, because this also is vanity. Chapter 6, verse 2. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all his desires, yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity. And it is an evil affliction. Verse 7. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does a poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? Verse 9. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. In other words, be satisfied with what you have. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Verse 11, since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? Verse 12, for who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? And God has a warning for such people. In Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 23. Jeremiah 9, verse 23. Thus says the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, let not the mighty man glory in his might, nor let the rich man glory in his riches. And then going over to the New Testament in James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, further elaborating on the rich and wealthy who don't need God. James chapter 5 and verse 1. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches are corrupted. Your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver are corroded. The corrosion will be a witness against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have heaped up treasure in the last days, and we just heard about in the first message about taxes, how corrupt that all is and where that money is going to. Rich want more money. They want to take advantage of the poor or of the average man. Verse 4, indeed the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of Lord of Sabaoth. Verse 5, you have lived on the earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your hearts as in the day of slaughter. Verse 6, you have condemned, you have murdered the just. He does not resist you. Satan was once again trying to get to this young man with his riches and with these so-called friends. Notice Psalm 62 and verse 10. Psalm 62 and verse 10. Do not trust in oppression, nor vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart on them. This is where Satan will pounce. He uses the material possessions, material things in life to get to people, to anybody. And one example of this can be found in Job chapter 31, verses 24 through 28. Job 31, 24. If I have made gold my hope, or said to find gold, you are my confidence. If I have rejoiced because my wealth was great, and because my hand had gained much. If I observe the sun when it shines, or the moon moving in brightness, so that my heart has been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also would be an iniquity deserving of judgment. For I would have denied God, who is above. Satan also tempted Jesus by offering him all the kingdoms of the world if he would only worship him. Familiar? I've seen Matthew chapter 4 and verse 8. But if Satan could tempt the only perfect man, the whole world, don't you think he could do the same to us? Yes, he does it all the time. But he tried to get at Christ, trying to cause him to fail. Matthew chapter 4, verse 8. The devil took him up on an exceedingly high mountain, showed him all the kings of the world and the glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me. Jesus said to him, away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve. And people do fall into the snare and temptation because they desire to be rich for all the wrong reasons. And we know that this is a root of all evil. Notice 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. And in verse 9 of chapter 6. But those who desire to be rich, they fall into a temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. That has been their idol, placing this before God. We shouldn't trust in riches, but we should trust in God. And remember, with God, putting our complete faith and trust in him, anything then is possible. Back to the story. So this young man, he went back to the same old problems that had gotten him in trouble the first time. Example of this, Mark chapter 4, verse 19. In Mark chapter 4, verse 19, we read, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches and the desires for other things entering in choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And also in Luke 21, verse 34. Luke 21, verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing with drunkenness, with cares of his life, and the day come on you unexpectedly. We must be very careful not to put material things before God. It's a trap. And I'm sure we can all relate to this. Because we are not perfect, we do slip up, and it is within our carnal nature that we do so. I'm not talking about committing the unpardonable sin, but what I'm talking about is that when we do sin, we need to ask for forgiveness from God and strength so that we don't keep stumbling into the same problems. However, we can't let it get past that point, because once you've gone too far, chances are it'll be extremely difficult for you to come back. It's not impossible, but it is extremely difficult. You start to forget God. Start to forget all laws, everything that's stated in the Bible. You just don't want to do it anymore. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 20. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 20. I'll read to verse 22. For if, after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and overcome, the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having known it, to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. Verse 22, but it has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his own vomit. In other words, returning to the own sinful conduct that they had come out of. And the sow, having washed, to her wallowing in the mire. Going right back into the same mistakes. This is very dangerous. And this is why we have to be careful at all times. Now, towards the end of the story, he realized that he was all alone again. He missed his parents, and he went to find them, and he remembered what they had told him to do. A great example in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1. Proverbs chapter 4, and beginning in verse 1. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands, and live. Verse 5, get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Verse 7, wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you. Verse 10, hear, my son, receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. When you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. It is interesting how many times a reminder is being stated here. Do not forget. Do not let go. It is a continuous thing that we go through in life. This is an excellent example from which our learning and our wisdom originate. Now, for me personally, I have experienced exactly this my whole life, being taught the truth, making sure that I would not depart from it. And most, if not all, the credit goes to my teachers, my parents. Sure, there have been times they have plenty of stories, I'm sure, to tell. of difficult situations in my life, but they've always been there. They've always been there to teach me, and all of you here listening in, you know, those parents that I brought you up in the church can say the same thing. It doesn't have to be just parents, though. You know, it's the ministers of the church or whatever it may be. But I would not even be in this position in front of you today giving this message if it weren't for them. So thank you. At the conclusion of the story, this young man had a change of heart. His selfish ways went away because he would sacrifice his own life to save his parents. Now, if we were in a similar situation, I'm sure you would probably do the same thing. Hopefully you would never would be in a situation like that. But we all offer sacrifices to God on a continuous basis. And Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 proves that point. Romans 12, verse 1. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And the warning is the next verse. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Become converted, that you may prove and even test what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. If you want to achieve perfection, this is what we have to do. And just as Christ sacrificed his life for us, we read this in Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. Walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling aroma. And verse 25. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. What does Christ tell us in John chapter 15, verses 12 and 13, how we should love one another? John 15, verse 12. John 15, verse 12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Verse 13, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. We all have great love for each other. At least we should. And as we have heard many times throughout our lives, we should have love for one another. 1 John chapter 3, verse 16. 1 John chapter 3, verse 16. By this we know love, because he, that's Christ, laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. Verse 19, and by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. And verse 22, whatever we ask, we receive from him, because we keep his commandments and do those things that are pleasing in his sight. And a lot of times we continue to ask, and we continue to ask. We don't give up. And there's a lot of patience that we have to be involved with. And it may seem like we're in situations where, okay, God is not answering our prayers or what we are asking. But you know, this is all part of it. And if we just then throw in the towel and give up, and we definitely have the answer, right? But not knowing is sometimes a blessing too. Because if we do know everything, then we probably neglect a lot of things too. So again, God has a perfect plan for us, what he has in store for us in our lives that he knows, and we just have to trust that. You know, Verse 23, this is his commandment. We should believe on the name of his Son, Jesus Christ, love one another as he gave us commandment. This story of sacrifice could also be viewed as a love story. So not that typical kind of love story that we are all familiar with, but this one showed a change of heart from a young man and a deep love for his parents, who would give up his life to save theirs. And we should also have the same type of attitude for each other and also for God, sacrificing our lives to him. Remember, we are all a family who looks after each other. And soon, we will all be part of God's family.